Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, October 26th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by CJ. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today on our spooky, scary Halloween episode, we will be discussing the lipstick effect and other unexpected consumer trends during economic uncertainty. But first, let's introduce our guests. Joining us today is Principal Analyst Susie David Canyon. Hey, Susie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And also here with us is Senior Analyst Zach Stambor. Welcome, Zach.
Hey, Sarah.
All right, let's get started with our first segment, News and Reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's headline is an October 20th story from The Guardian titled Zara Enters Resale Market with Pre-Owned Service. Zara is just the latest brand to take over its own resale market with a pre-owned service launching on November 3rd. Resale will help Zara market itself as more sustainable, but it also lets the company control its merchandise even after its initial purchase. Susie, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is...
So I think, one, we should remember that it's just UK right now, so they're probably piloting it to see if it works. I think, you know, Zara is akin to disposable clothing, so it makes sense that they got the worst rap when it came to fast fashion and super duper offenders of very bad practices when it comes to climate and environmentally friendly. So not a surprise they're trying to get into it. I'm not sure it's going to work. The price points are so low to begin with. And I know that they are coming at a favorable time with the economy downturn. But I also think that if you're going to buy things that are already not expensive, then you're probably going to go to an aggregator like a ThredUp in the US, where you're going to have access to other cheaper brands to pick from, not just what Zara is offering.
Absolutely. That makes so much sense. Zach, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is...
As Susie said, Zara's clothing is very disposable clothing. And so I think this is kind of like a sustainable-ish initiative. Their clothing is rather inexpensive and, as I said, disposable. And so I'm not really clear on how many times any piece can be washed and still be worth reselling. I'm also not clear on whether this will mollify critics who look at fast fashion as an unsustainable business model that's bad for the environment.
That's me. I'm critics who look at fast fashion as an unsustainable business model. Well, unsustainable in terms of environmental sustainability. That's bad for the environment. And I've said it before, I don't like fast fashion. I'm not convinced that owning your own resale market is as environmentally friendly as these companies market it to be. But I'm not in charge of saying my review in 60 seconds, so let's keep moving.
Wait, but can I say something about that? I think it's better than being at a landfill because it'll get disposed of in a better way. It'll hopefully get recycled. And I think they're doing lots of other things to be, Zara specifically, to be seen as trying to do their part to remove carbon footprints by like charging, they're piloting charging returns so that people aren't buying 37 tops and then returning 36 of them, right? So they are, I mean, I am neither here nor there for fast fashion particularly, but I do think they're trying with whatever their current business model is to be a little bit more of a responsible corporate citizen.
I think that's right. It's just like the overall business model is rather unsustainable. So even if you do this on the margin, is it going to make any difference in the big picture?
Yeah, this sure is where being Canadian, it's like everybody's got to do their part. And if everybody doesn't do their little part, then it's not going to work on the whole.
Okay, we have one checkbox for Susie mentioning being Canadian.
Wait, should I say Armenian too?
Now we have two checkboxes. We just need me mentioning having gone to the University of Michigan and Zach mentioning living in Chicago. Let's keep moving. It's time for our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is the lipstick effect and other eerie e-commerce indexes. Can you tell that I'm pushing Halloween with this messaging? The lipstick effect describes the theory that during times of economic strain, people, and women in particular, will still buy lipstick because it's a small and somewhat justifiable luxury. Whether or not the lipstick effect can be proven, the greater implication is that consumers will still splurge, maybe even splurge more during economic hardship. Susie, is the lipstick effect something you've seen working in retail?
Yes. I mean, yes, because I'm old enough to have seen a few recessions, so I have seen it. And I think what's different this time around is that people were already value conscious. You know, we're in a swirl of many uncertainties with lots of different headlines that are a little bit tension ridden and hard to make sense of. So people are still spending a lot of money. That's one group. And then there are a lot of other people that are sort of starting to trade down, starting to buy more private label, starting to go to discounters, starting to be a little bit more price conscious. So that's where the lipstick effect sort of coined term that came out of, I think, Estee Lauder is really truly happening no matter what area you're in terms of these small luxuries, as you said, that are indulgences, that are mood boosters, this idea of treating yourself, the world is falling apart. And right now, which I think is also different, it's not just economically, it's also like politically, geopolitically, like literally the world is falling apart. So buying yourself a lipstick, cool, that'll make me feel better.
Yeah, I believe this term was coined by Estee Lauder or someone from Estee Lauder in, I think, 2001, another time where it probably felt like the world was falling apart. So, Zach, anything to add on that?
Yeah, Susie mentioned value, and I think value is such a critical piece here because there can be something that's like relatively expensive or more expensive than you would normally pay for something. An example might be like a Yeti coffee mug. It's a pretty expensive purchase relative to like something you could buy from Walgreens or whatever. But if I can use it to make my own coffee at home rather than get Starbucks, then it pays for itself, and I feel the value of that purchase within, you know, a few weeks.
I do think the other thing that's a little bit different, so this idea of value, right, is not just price point, but it's also like price quality. But I think one of the other things that's a little bit different this year, according to NPD research that I just read, they're seeing that like makeups that are selling now are also tied to like what we just talked about, climate, right? So reusable tubes, things that are natural, more organic, more environmentally friendly versus in the previous recession in like the housing bubble burst times, it was more like, what shade should I buy? And now it's like, how can I be a better human for the environment and still make myself happy and find joy?
That's really interesting, this idea that like a trend might persist, but the way that people are approaching it is completely different based on the way in which the world feels like it's ending at that given time. And right now, one of the ways the world feels like it's ending is environmentally. Okay, so the lipstick effect isn't the only one of these unexpected indexes. There's one that claims women's hemlines go up during recession. There's another one that says champagne sales go down because there's less to celebrate. There's one that says more people sign up for dating apps and dating sites. There's one that says people buy more chocolate. I want to discuss some of these and talk about what we can glean from them. So let's start with one called the Men's Underwear Index. We found this one in a 2008 NPR piece that argued that men's underwear sales go down when people have less money to spend. That's not ideal, but it makes sense. Less money means less buying new things, even underwear. But this index is sort of the opposite of the lipstick effect, where people were buying more. Why is that, Zach?
Yeah, so it kind of makes sense because like men's underwear are maybe like the least sexy purchase. Well, at least for many men, maybe I'm speaking for myself, that you can buy. And so when you think about the things that you need to buy and what you're spending money on gas, you're spending money on food. If you have kids, you need to clothe them. So you buy kids' clothes that they're constantly outgrowing. And so like men's underwear are just at the very end of the line. And so that's why you might see a downturn in men's underwear sales.
Yeah, I mean, these indexes are a little bit limiting in terms of maybe like how we think about gender and gendered purchases. They're a bit dated, but like at the end of the day, I think what you're saying has some truth to it. The lipstick index is like this like sexy, flashy purchase. And on the other side of that spectrum, you have something that you buy in a bag of 10 from Target. So
it's fun. Like there's fun. And then there's like the practical, like everyday things that, you know, you have to buy when it's absolutely necessary, but you don't like enjoy buying it.
And does it really make a difference? Like what, like, because the lipstick effect technically is saying like, I'm willing to buy a $25 tube of lipstick because I think it's better and it makes me happy. Is there that equivalent in men's underwear?
I think it depends on who you ask. Okay, like, I think that there probably is luxury items in underwear in other areas. And like this, like basic, the basic of it, just like the bag of underwear is something that sort of falls by the wayside. It's not a luxury. All right. Shall we move on to a somewhat more observable phenomenon?
In so many ways, more observable, yes.
So despite prices going up, the National Retail Federation predicts shoppers will spend more on Halloween this year. I guess that is consistent with prices going up, but more people are also spending more on Halloween this year. So the NRF predicts shoppers will spend $10.6 billion on Halloween this year, which is an all-time high. According to LendingTree, 16% more Americans will spend on Halloween this year than last year. Six-figure earners will spend the most, but parents of children younger than 18 are close behind. And 36% of consumers say they'll spend more on Halloween than they can or maybe should afford. Are we seeing a lipstick effect style Halloween splurge this year?
Zach and I have talked about this a few times already. So I think we're sort of in agreement in that. I don't know that I can answer your question in the exact way you asked, because I think it's more around gift giving, right? And like bringing other people joy. So these are not expensive things. So it's not necessarily the idea around small luxuries, maybe. Although if you're tightening your budgets, obviously Halloween candy is not at the top of your budget must have list. But it is a small little incremental mood booster, especially if you have kids. And again, as the world is falling apart, it's such an easy way to add joy.
Right. It's like the whole lipstick effect is the notion of like, hey, let's live a little. Like inflation is soaring, everything's going to hell. And like, let's just like smile and have a little bit of joy. And Halloween or the holidays looking ahead bring us a little bit of joy. So whether you buy a little few more stocking stuffers or some extra gelt, you can bring a little bit more joy into your life.
But I think we also have to remember that this idea of spending a little bit more is on these small ticketed items to begin with that you might not need. So it's still a little bit premium, maybe not exactly what you could afford, but it feels like you can do it because it's only quote unquote $25 versus, you know, buying a whole new outfit that makes you feel really good about yourself. But that is like way more expensive than a lipstick, right? So I think it's the idea around affordable, but also there is some sort of cachet or premium that makes you feel special. Which is why I don't know that the Halloween sort of increase, I think that's just more like everybody is so sad that eating chocolate will make everybody feel better.
Yeah, millennials are going to spend more than average on Halloween this year. I would love to say that's because like young people like me are like, the world is ending. We're millennials. We want to splurge. I think what that actually is that millennials are parents. We are no longer super young. A lot of millennials are parents. And so they're joining that cohort of parents who are spending more on Halloween because it's a holiday and that is what you do when you're a parent.
As a geriatric millennial, I completely agree.
Well, I'm not even a millennial, so you can't even say those words now.
I think that I'm a zillennial. Is that what it's called? Like I'm cusp, but I'm on the millennial side.
I think I might be cusp baby boomer.
I don't know.
Right. I'm just joking. I'm just joking. Nobody can see me.
All right. We've talked through all of our ages. Did you have something to add, Susie, before we go to break?
Only that one of the many articles that we read and studies that we looked at, what I thought was interesting was there's also this idea of when times are tough that people don't want to just trade down to the bare bones minimum, but might do things like, and the example was a UK example again, but instead of going to the movies where it costs so much money, maybe you go to bowling with your family. And so I do think that as retailers, you should start to think if you don't have these like small premium impulse luxury items, then think about like selling a suite of products that is fun but affordable.
Sure. I think that's a great way to tie this up without us having to revisit men's underwear or lipstick. So we're going to go to break and talk more about some specific examples. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, CJ. Just as the affiliate industry is continuously adapting and growing, so is the CJ platform. CJ is consistently releasing new technology, solutions, and enhancements to meet your evolving business needs. Learn more about CJ's approach to releasing cutting-edge technology designed to streamline your workflows and get to know CJ's innovation at www.cj.com/emarketer/innovation. Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. Today, we're listing four brands benefiting from lipstick effect type behavior. Susie, can you kick it off with our first brand?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we just talked about Halloween and Halloween candy and how that's a no-brainer. Those are traditionally not premium candy, so maybe that's why it didn't feel like it was part of the lipstick effect in that moment, just to feel good sort of mood booster. I do think, however, premium chocolate can be part of this, and that we'll probably see companies like my personal favorite of the more premium is Lindt, because it's like so easily accessible. It's sold in stores. It's sold at drugstores. It's kind of delicious and it's kind of expensive, but not that expensive. So it's like an easy way to feel good and not feel like you broke your bank.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the last time I bought Lindt chocolates, I was going through something and I was like, it's the drugstore luxury, right?
Yeah. So, and if you go to the store, you get a free sample.
Susie, are you sponsored by Lindt?
I don't even know why that made me so happy to get a free $3 chocolate. But it's kind of like, how could you not be happy?
I'm kind of excited about it.
Zach, what is another brand benefiting from lipstick effect type behavior?
So I'm going to cheat and couple a few together, but craft beer is the general category. There's like two main areas that craft beer falls that I'm thinking. One is the non-alcoholic craft beer, which is just booming. So Athletic Brewing is like the big brand in that space. But then, you know, pick your local brewery. I'll say Hop Butcher to the World because I'm in Chicago, but it could be Grimm in New York or wherever you are. There's like a dozen breweries that could fit.
Sure. And why are people shopping for beer now more than other times?
It's a small upgrade. It's a few dollars to indulge. And also, one other piece is that, like, you might be trading down from going out to the bar with your friends to having people at your house. And so rather than spend like $8 on a pint at the bar, you can just buy a six pack or a four pack for, you know, $15 or whatever it might be.
Sure. Yeah. So it's a trade up from that PBR or that Kirkland brand beer I mention so often. And it's a trade down from going out to the bar. If I were financially more responsible, I would be trading down from going to the bar.
Well, I mean, you are having Kirkland beer, so that, you know, that makes up for going to the bars.
I must admit I'm not having the Kirkland beer and I am going to the bar. All right, Susie, give me our third brand benefiting from lipstick effect type behavior.
So I'm cheating too, but not in the same way, in that coffee is a simple luxury. It's part of a routine. And I think everybody knows, so I'm just saying it and taking credit for it, that Starbucks is one of those companies that is going to benefit from these small luxuries. If you even think about when financial advisors talk to you about like a savings plan and they're like, cut out your coffee, don't go every day. And you're like, how can I do that? And I am not a Starbucks drinker and I don't understand why you would ever pay $7 for a cup of coffee, but I am in the small minority. And so I think people might not buy as many cups of Starbucks coffee, but they're certainly going to keep buying Starbucks coffee.
That makes sense. I'm also not a Starbucks drinker, but I am a spend $7 on a latte from the local coffee shop drinker, which is probably more like, I don't know, pretentious than Starbucks. The Starbucks app, the last couple weeks, keeps sending me notifications. I have the app because if you go to Starbucks even once, it makes sense to have the app. And it keeps trying to get me to go there. I wonder if those are connected. Maybe it just knows I haven't been on the app in a really long time.
It definitely knows. It's trying to get you back. Or maybe it's telling you, we know you use Delta a lot, so come back because then you'll get Delta points.
I mean, sorry, Starbucks app, but I probably won't have another Starbucks until the next time I go to an airport. And then I definitely will have Starbucks. So
it's true.
All right, Zach, take us home with our fourth brand benefiting from lipstick effect type behavior.
So Lego is the one that I'll point to. It's a toy brand that thrived during the pandemic. It's continued to grow this year. It does an amazing job with licensing. And so, you know, when I was a kid, you would buy Legos and you would have to come up with whatever it is you were going to build. You don't do that anymore. You just build the set that they tell you how to build it. And then you move on to the next one. And it's available at any price point. And I think that's really like the important part here, because you can trade up, you can trade down, but they really hit just about every note, including like really expensive ones, but also relatively inexpensive ones as well.
So do you think this like Lego boom, Lego effect has to do with people continuing to spend more or like the same on kids and kids' toys? Or is this driven also by adults?
I think it's both. On the one hand, kids are going to continue to have birthday parties, whether it's an economic downturn or whether it's an economic boom. And Legos is just like one of those toys that like you get a bunch of them every birthday party. But then also from the pandemic, a lot of adults got hooked on Legos. And so they've built these crazy Lego sets. And I think a lot of them are going to continue to do so and have continued to do so.
Zach, you have kids, so I'm assuming you've been exposed to Legos. Are you an adult who's hooked on Legos?
I am not. I will watch my kids do Legos, but I don't really indulge.
All right. Well, that is all we have time for today. So thank you for joining me, Zach.
Thank you.
And thank you, Susie.
Thanks.
Do you have retail-specific questions for our analysts? You can email us at podcasts@emarketer.com for a chance to have your question answered on the pod. Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Thank you to listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and keeps everything held together like Legos. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast made possible by CJ. And tomorrow, Marcus will bring you yet another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast.